Right now, NPR is updating its ethics policy and, as one change, allowing journalists to demonstrate in certain situations. According to its ethics handbook, journalists can participate in marches, rallies, and public events that advocate for, quote, the freedom and dignity of human beings, end quote. That applies for in-person activities and on social media. But before they could take part in demonstrations, journalists would need to get permission from their bosses. The change comes as newsrooms around the country wrestle with where to draw the line between journalist and citizen, especially in the wake of George Floyd's death last year. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you've been following the story, what do you think about NPR's new ethics policy? In general, should journalists be allowed to demonstrate? If so, when and where? What kind of things do you not want to see journalists doing at NPR or any outlet? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Bartson-Culver is an associate professor in the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. She's the James E. Burgess Chair in Journalism Ethics and Director of the Center for Journalism Ethics. She's also a visiting faculty member for the Poynter Institute for Media Studies. Katie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob. I'm delighted to be here today.
Now, this is a change to one part of a very long ethics policy from NPR. What do you think of these updates, these changes when it comes to journalists' participation in public life?
Well, they certainly have churned up a lot of conversation about journalism ethics, which I always think is a good thing. The more people think about this, the better. I think they've been controversial in some parts because they have deterred from a pretty standard set of practices in newsrooms. But I think they're part of a really important ongoing conversation about how we can earn the trust of readers and listeners and viewers while not surrendering who we are as human beings.
Right. I think the old general rule, the current general rule for a lot of people in journalism is when in doubt, don't. Could you talk about how that works and how it's often applied in newsrooms?
Yeah, that's a pretty old adage in the business. Like if you're going to call me about an ethics question, if you're concerned about it, you probably shouldn't do it. But I don't want to make light of this because it comes from a really, really important and challenging set of circumstances that really caught fire last summer in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, but have been going on for quite some time. And that is, how can we maintain neutral practices and fair practices within journalism while not clinging to some antiquated and quite possibly biased sense of objectivity? None of us are objective as human beings. We all have thoughts and feelings and we care about people, we care about issues. So you're not a robot. How can you make justifiable decisions in your reporting using objective methods, even though we cannot be objective as people?
The NPR ethics guidelines, they say, in a lot of cases, they aren't hard and fast rules. They're guidelines, check-in in particular circumstances. But one distinction that these guidelines make pretty clearly is if this rally or this event or whatever is calling for specific legislation to change or advocating for a particular political candidate, that's still out of bounds. Do you think that's a good distinction to make?
I think that's a good distinction in these particular rules because it's one of the clearer distinctions in these rules. There are some others that are a little that are foggy enough, I think, that they will be problematic. But not supporting a particular candidate at a rally, great. But they still do allow people to vote. Like, you can cast your vote for a particular candidate. So we shouldn't end the conversation at these guidelines. We should still be talking with reporters, producers, editors about, if you do favor a particular candidate, how are you going to address that in your journalism? How are you going to make sure that your practices are actually neutral, even though you voted for one side or the other?
You mentioned the foggier areas. Where do you see the densest fog here?
Yeah, the densest fog to me is the line freedom and dignity of human beings. Mm-hmm. That is going to be seen very, very differently by different people. So, the issue that popped immediately to my mind was the issue of abortion, which is very thorny. You could see someone in a newsroom saying, I'm going to go to this pro-choice march because it has to do with women's freedom. You could have someone else say, oh, I'm going to go to this pro-life march because it has to do with the dignity of unborn human beings. So I think that this could get very, very fuzzy as they begin to work it out. But I will credit them with saying, the first place that you should go is a conversation. You know, they say with your boss. I guess they have to give that hierarchical structure. The conversations within news organizations when it comes to ethics are very important, so that you're not just on your own making these decisions, that you are actually hearing from other sides and multiple viewpoints.
We're talking to Kathleen Bartson-Culver from the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication, looking at new ethics guidelines from NPR, updating extensive older ethics guidelines, but basically allowing, in some cases, for their journalism staff to participate in some kinds of public demonstrations or rallies. We are looking at the ethics behind that, some of the many gray areas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Katie, it seems like lately it's harder and harder to point toward any topic and have it not be politicized these days. I don't know. Is it hard to define parts of our lives that don't have a potential political controversy in them?
Told me 2 years ago that we would have a global pandemic and masks and vaccines would become a political issue, I would have called you insane. So we are in polarized times, and they're very surprising times. And I think that's why NPR very admirably pulled together this group of almost 24 people to address this. You know, if I'm a producer at Wisconsin Public Radio, and I put out a Facebook post saying, you know, I really think it's important for all of us to mask and get vaccinated. Under their old ethics guidelines, people had to stay away from quote unquote controversial issues. So to me, that post would run afoul of those older guidelines. And so I think it's good that they have this update going on, and that they're going to have conversations about what you can and cannot do in these contexts.
Another question that they bring up in these guidelines is, can you, if you're an NPR reporter, say, be on the PTA for your kid's school? Mm-hmm. Do we worry about if you're a member of a church, a religious congregation? They don't worry about that, that you can do that under these rules. But these ways that journalists in their daily lives might do some kind of public role and raise concerns of bias. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's always been one that's been vexing within newsrooms. And I think there's some people take the concept of independence too far. So one of the core tenets of journalism ethics that you see reflected in a lot of codes is that we ought to be independent of anything that might bias our reporting. And, you know, to use the PTA example, so you shouldn't be on the PTA because it might bias your reporting in some way. Well, it also gives you a really eyes wide open look inside what's going on in an education system. It's giving you context and perspective that you otherwise might not have. And so I don't think that is as clear cut. You know, who can be a religion reporter? Well, does it have to be someone who adheres to no religion? Does it have to be an atheist? Can it be none of those things? So I think all of these cases, we have to think less about the beliefs of a person and more about how they address those beliefs within their practices. To give you an example, I was a police and courts reporter for some years, and I personally am opposed to the death penalty, but I was working in a state that at that time had the death penalty, and I had to constantly be having conversations, checking myself, making sure I wasn't allowing those personal beliefs to influence my coverage. And I would be pretty open talking with prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, asking them what they thought about my reporting so that I was getting feedback to uncover potential ways that bias was leaking in.
We're picking up our talk on journalism ethics. NPR recently updated part of its ethics policy and now says it's okay for journalists to demonstrate in certain situations those that advocate for, quote, the freedom and dignity of human beings, end quote. So to apply in person and on social media, NPR journalists would have to get permission from their supervisors, though. Kathleen Culver is with us, associate professor in the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. She's the James E. Burgess Chair in Journalism Ethics and director of the Center for Journalism Ethics. and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from your journalists, whether at NPR or Wisconsin Public Radio, your newspaper, wherever, when it comes to ethics? Do you think it's okay for them to participate in some kind of demonstrations, not others? Where would you draw the line if you were the boss in the newsroom? What question do you have about journalism ethics? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. And Katie, with your example a few moments ago, talking about a reporter with an opinion, it was you in this case, about the death penalty, but trying to make sure you overcome that in your journalism. NPR has a companion side of the part we're talking about exactly that issue, how to check your own opinions and your own biases to make sure you are doing a good job, a full job of covering whatever the issue is. What kind of things should journalists keep in mind? Because everybody thinks something about something.
Well, I think one of the things to keep for all of us to keep in mind is that bias is not only in the mind of the journalist, it's also in the eye of the consumer. So we have a pretty rock solid research showing that you can have a story that's sort of built to be neutral, and we encounter what's known as the hostile media effect or the hostile media phenomenon, that you take that neutral story and you put it in front of partisans on the left and the right, and they will both see it as hostile to their political viewpoint or their worldview. And so the same story gets seen as biased by different people. And it comes up all the time. You know, I'll hear from citizens, mainly in Wisconsin, they'll be concerned about a particular story and say, you know, isn't this honestly a textbook case of journalistic bias? And I'll read it. And I had one recently where I couldn't understand what the emailer was asking me about. And I said, you know, can you tell me where you see the bias? And, you know, when he told me, I was very, very, very surprised by it. Some of the practices that we can all engage in are talking with people outside of the newsroom. So checking with sources, you know, hey, the story ran yesterday. What did you think? Any concerns? Anything I need to think about for future stories? Being open to commentary from our viewers and listeners and readers, even though, you know, just to be fair to journalists, some of those comments can get very, very toxic. And so it's not an easy thing to be monitoring responses to you. And then just staying open constantly to interrogating what you believe in, what you feel strongly about, and where it might be affecting your coverage.
I think that's really interesting, Katie, the idea that, yes, in fact, we could get a lot from hearing what our listeners or readers or whatever the case might be think about bias, but worried about the whole don't read the comments because some awful stuff happens in there. Have you seen a really productive mechanism that gets the really good stuff from the audience that can help then inform the journalist?
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting group. It's called the Trusting News Project. And they've had some research that indicates that when news organizations run a story, sort of run like a companion piece to a story about why they're making a particular choice, why they did what they did, it improves trust. But it also improves engagement. So you hear more from the audience and you get better comments from them. So, for instance, a paper that happens to have a mass shooting in their area, and they explain why they are naming the shooter, because for victims' rights advocates and survivors of those shootings, it's very controversial to name the shooter. They want the focus to be on anyone but that person. And so, you know, when that paper says, this is why we named the person, and this is how we're going to minimize the amount of naming, this is what we're doing to not sensationalize, that improves the relationship with the audience.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Marilyn is with us in Ellison Bay. Marilyn, hello.
Hello. I'd be curious how the resource person that you're speaking with today feels about the abolishment of the Fairness Doctrine, which I believe was in the late 1980s, and how that may have played out in its effect on biased versus non-biased journalism, and, you know, maybe some other factors that happened differently without the Fairness Doctrine.
Marilyn, thanks for the call. Katie, do you have thoughts on that?
That's a fantastic question, Marilyn. And yes, there definitely were effects arising from the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine during the Reagan administration. Probably the biggest one that we could point to is the rise of talk radio, particularly on the right. You would not have a Rush Limbaugh kind of figure if you hadn't had the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine. There are plenty of researchers who point to that as contributing to our polarization, that when we don't present multiple sides of an issue, it can lead people to only find those sources that they that reinforce their worldview and sort of drive them further into their own corners. That said, I think the rise of the internet happened regardless of what happened with the Fairness Doctrine. So you could have these politically polarized sites online rather than on radio, and we would see the same kinds of effects.
Marilyn, thanks a lot for that call. Katie, this isn't exactly on the NPR thing, but for outlets that have a news side and an opinion side, whether that's a newspaper with an editorial section or a TV network that has, you know, the Sean Hannity's of the world and things like that, but also a news operation at the same time, are there different rules, do you think, for participation for the opinion people as opposed to the journalistic people?
Yes, you would see, Nicholas Kristof from The New York Times, really important voice on human rights. Mm-hmm. You would see him participating in not just, marches or protests, but charitable fundraising as well. Mm-hmm. So there are, the rules have always been different for opinion journalists versus news coverage. But I would note that research also tells us that readers and viewers and listeners really don't detect those opinion versus fact-based news presentation differences in the way that a lot of people assume that they do within newsrooms. So, we see a clear delineation between the editorial board and the news reporters at the, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The readers of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel don't see that line as bright.
Thanks a lot for the call, Marilyn. We're talking to Kathleen Bartson-Culver from the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. We're talking about ethics in journalism after a change in guidelines from NPR about when journalists can participate in things like public demonstrations. Short version, sometimes yeah, sometimes no. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Katie, are there ways you think journalists should change their mindset to be more open to the concerns of their audience about bias, whether real or perceived?
Yeah, I have this great friend who asked this most compelling question at one of our ethics conferences. She said, "When was the last time you opened your mind to something you felt really strongly about?" And sort of everyone in the room kind of paused and went, "Well, it's been a really long time." And so I think that's something that all of us as just human beings should think about. But particularly within newsrooms, what are the practices that you have held to and just repeated over and over again that might be worth changing? And I think things like this NPR conversation are very, very good to help us sort of open our eyes to that. I'll give you an example. There are a few news organizations right now, the latest being the Associated Press, that are deciding that they're no longer going to report people's names when a crime is minor. So if a 17 or 18 year old is arrested for theft, should that person's name be actually in the report? Because it's going to last forever online and it will affect their ability to get potentially jobs, potentially housing. And then a few organizations, the Salt Lake Tribune and the Boston Globe being two big examples, are now taking requests from people to unpublish their names for, again, minor crimes that happened long ago and don't have any continuing impact today. They can petition the news organization to have their name removed from that. Other journalists would say that's absolutely ridiculous. We are the paper of record. We include names. If something happens in the public, it ends up in the paper, and that's the way things should stay. I think those conversations are vitally important now.
Katie, I'm looking right now at the website, npr.org/ethics, where people can go and read the NPR Ethics Handbook. Not always gripping reading, but it's out there. How important do you think it is for journalistic outlets to make this behind-the-scenes stuff public and to promote that this stuff exists?
Extremely important. I think we've been so closed and like a kind of this walled garden of journalism ethics over the years, not talking about practices, not saying why we make the decisions we make. And that leads people to not trust us, to think that journalism is arrogant or it is cavalier. When in reality, really, really difficult decisions are going on in every newsroom across the country every day. Really tough stuff, because often journalism reports on things that are very, very hard. You know, we're reporting on crime, we're reporting on disaster, we're reporting on health crisis. And so people can be harmed by journalism. And one of the tenets of journalism ethics is to minimize that harm. But to talk more about how we minimize it, I think, is critically important. I would recommend anybody who listens to Wisconsin Public Radio, you might want to subscribe to the NPR Public Editor newsletter that comes out once a week. It deals with audience feedback to NPR, tackles questions, sometimes takes a very critical stance on what NPR has chosen to do. I think it's a good thing to sort of get an inside look at the decision-making that goes on.
Katie, thanks for joining us again today.
Oh, it was great to be with you.
Kathleen Barton-Culver is Associate Professor in the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication, Director of the Center for Journalism Ethics. We talked about NPR's updated ethics policy and where lines are drawn between journalism, activism, and conflicts of interest.